This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to another episode of the Swamp 247 podcast. I am your host, Graham Hall, joined by my co-host, Jacob Brunner, and we've got a lot to talk about today. A lot is going on in Gainesville, from baseball, gymnastics, of course. We're going to be mainly talking today, though, about the start of Florida spring football camp, an exciting time in Gainesville. We're going to talk in the second half of this episode about the optimism surrounding the program from getting Graham Mertz back. First time Florida's had a starting quarterback come back in 4 years, first time in the Napier era. And from him saying on signing day that he believed this is the deepest the roster has been during his time. We'll also be starting today's episode by talking about the Florida basketball season. The regular season is now in the books, and while Florida finds itself unranked in the latest AP Top 25 poll, there are plenty of reasons to be optimistic about this team, as the Gators are all but set to make the NCAA tournament for the first time under Todd Golden. Jacob, good to have you back. Thanks for joining me today.
Graham, it's always a pleasure to be here.
All right, Jacob, for those who don't know, you are going to be up in Nashville later this week for the SEC tournament. I know you're excited to get up there. We've now found out when the Gators are going to play, but we yet to know who they are going to be playing. That is going to be decided Wednesday night when Georgia, led by former Florida coach Mike White, takes on Missouri in a battle of the number 11 and number 14 seeds. And then Florida will have to wait until Thursday night. They're not going to tip off until probably after 9:45 p.m. Eastern time against the winner of that game. Jacob, just what do you make of the way that the Gators closed the regular season, getting a win over Alabama, an 18-point win that saw Florida hang 105 points on the Crimson Tide, but yet a little bit of a disappointing end to the season with Florida falling at Vanderbilt 79-78 on Saturday night. Just what do you make of how Florida has progressed, finishing 14-1 at home? Certainly there have been some downsides to this season, but just what do you make overall of how Florida finished the regular season under Todd Golden?
You know, I still stand by this, and we've talked about it before on the podcast, Graham. I think that Florida did what it needed to do this year overall, and a loss to close out the season at Vanderbilt, while disappointing, certainly in the short term, I don't really think it has an impact on the overall sentiment, which is that Florida had a really good season. It put together several very impressive wins, especially on its home floor where they beat Auburn and Alabama. And they finished the regular season with 21 overall wins and 11 in conference play. This team was vastly improved over what we saw Todd Golden put together in his first year with the Gators. And nothing that occurred towards the end of the season has swayed me too far from that overall takeaway. I'm not necessarily more positive on what the Gators were able to do because of their win at Alabama. And I'm certainly not more negative about what they were able to accomplish because of a loss at Vanderbilt. I think that this is a group that did really what you and I had expected them to do for the most part. For those of you who recall on our podcast, we talked about before the season, on my SEC preseason ballot, I picked the Gators to finish sixth. That's exactly where they finished this season. And this was a group that was, it really did just live up to expectations across the board, whether that was Zion Pullen being able to orchestrate and facilitate for this offense at a very high level, which he did and earned first team all SEC honors as a result. Whether that was Walter Clayton's ability to score, he scored at least 20 points in six of Florida's last 10 games to end the regular season. Alex Condon was somebody who you and I talked about on the podcast as a candidate to exceed expectations. I would go as far as to say that that occurred. And the list really does go on. So, you know, I think Florida has a lot to hang its hat on this year and certainly has some pretty high hopes going on into the postseason, like you mentioned. I think the SEC tournament has a limited amount of value to this group. Obviously, wins in Nashville could potentially increase where they stand going into the NCAA tournament. Whether or not it's going to make a real impact based on what's realistic in Nashville, I'm not so sure. But this is a team that is locked into a March Madness spot. It has been for some time now. And that was really the major test this year, is whether or not Todd Golden will be able to steer the ship off the bubble and firmly into the NCAA tournament. That's exactly where Florida sits 31 games into its season. And again, I think it has a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, they're in a very favorable position where they don't necessarily have to bank on an impressive run in Nashville in the SEC tournament to solidify their NCAA tournament seeding. You look at the strength of schedule. You look at the wins that Florida has picked up in, you know, quadrant one wins, getting them towards the end of the season. Minimal losses between quadrant two through four. That obviously is going to give you a really good chance of solidifying your place in the NCAA tournament. And most of the projections right now, you mentioned the seeding and how Florida could improve in the NCAA tournament. We've seen anywhere from an 8 or 9 seed, a 7 seed, potentially a 6 seed. So certainly something to play for. I know that a lot of people want you to avoid that 8 or 9 seed so you don't have to play a number one overall seed in the second round of the tournament. So certainly something that Florida can try and build on here in the SEC tournament is maybe avoiding that 8-9 slot. And I think they're going to have a good chance of doing it, whether it's facing the Dogs or the Tigers. If they can end up picking up 2 wins in the SEC tournament, I do think that there's going to be some discussion about maybe them getting one of those number 6 seeds, just seeing how their strength of schedule sets up, seeing how impressive they have been towards the end of the season here. But a lot of that remains to be seen. Before we talk about football a little bit, you talked about some of the additions that Florida made to the roster from last season. And I think that there was a little bit of cautious optimism regarding the additions of guys like Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen, and even the freshmen in, you know, Alex Condon and Thomas Hawk. I mean, you look here at the postseason awards that just came out today. We're recording this podcast on Monday, March 11th. A couple hours ago, you saw Zion Pullen named all SEC first team. You saw Walter Clayton named to the second team, and you saw Alex Condon pick up that all freshman team nomination. Just how does that speak to not just the ability to find complementary pieces, but this coaching staff's ability to find under the radar talent? I know guys like Pullen were getting interest from Gonzaga, LSU. So certainly these weren't no names who came to Gainesville, but adding them coming off of 16-17 season last year, what does that say in your mind about this coaching staff's ability to evaluate and lure talent to Gainesville, especially when they haven't really had the ideal results to sell prospects on? And of course, you can obviously dive in a little bit about Alex Condon. For those who missed it, you wrote a great story on the freshman additions that Florida made. I encourage everyone to check that out at Swamp247. It's a very exhaustive, well-researched piece. I encourage everyone to give that a read. But Jacob, just what does it say in your mind about this coaching staff's ability to go find players from around the country and even the international level and get them to Gainesville to have an impact in year one?
Well, first of all, you know, I think it's important to address something you said, which is that Florida didn't have great results last year, and it still was able to put together a roster top to bottom filled with value. And I think that that has a lot to do with the fact that Todd Golden was able to sell that that wasn't necessarily his team in its entirety last year. Florida hired Todd Golden late. Todd Golden brought in his entire staff even later. It wasn't until mid to late April that Florida had solidified its entire coaching staff. And when that's the case in this day and age of very fast-paced transfer portal recruiting, it makes it hard to be able to fully flush out a roster and then restock it with your own adequate talent in a short amount of time. And so Florida wasn't really able to do that ahead of his first season. We know that, especially in hindsight. And this offseason, or at least this past offseason, they were able to capitalize on just having all of their systems in place. Florida was established. Todd Golden knew the direction he wanted to take the program. He and his staff worked diligently and quickly as soon as the portal opened in order to be able to have talent visit campus. And then they were also quick on the back end of those processes. They did not take a lot of time to let prospects go through any sort of recruitment. Guys visited campus. Florida said, how do you feel? It's time to commit. And the players did that. So they were able to put together a very talented team quickly. And as it relates to evaluation, you know, I think that this is a group that really leans heavily, as you and I know, on the analytics, on the deeper meaning of statistics. That is a lot of the heavy lifting in their research. Of course, the eye test matters too. But this is a group that really knows how to identify talent that will mesh with their concepts and desires via the numbers. And they did a great job at that. You look at a guy like Walter Clayton, came in, great three-point shooter, great free throw shooter. Both of those things, as time went on, materialized. Zion Pullen was very quietly out on the West Coast at UC Riverside, an excellent passer. Florida knew that it was going to get a guy like that, who was also going to be a bigger body at that point guard position, somebody who could play with, you know, the physical requirements in the SEC. That's exactly what they got. Micah Hanlogton was somebody who played somewhat sparingly as a true freshman at Marshall last year and still was an offensive rebounding monster, very efficient scorer in the low block, which we saw quite a bit this year with his ability to put back points and grab offensive rebounds. And then you mentioned the freshman too. You know, Florida went out of its way to basically discover these two diamond in the rough type prospects, Thomas Houck out of Pennsylvania and Alex Condon, who you mentioned, the all freshman, you know, all SEC freshman honoree out of Perth, Australia. These were guys who were lowly recruited. Both were three-star prospects. Alex Condon really only had three choices if he wanted to play college basketball in St. Mary's, Utah, and Florida. But Florida had a lot of conviction that they had found two guys who were far better than their ratings had indicated, far better than even the schools that were pursuing them at the time had indicated. And now looking back on it, they were unequivocally correct in both of those evaluations. And so this is a staff that I think is in a really good position to be able to continue to do that. You know, damage in the portal, where it's going to find these guys who are going to mesh with its systems based on the production that they've already had at the Division I level. And then, of course, at the high school side, I think we end up seeing Florida continue to keep on this trend of trying to discover prospects it likes regardless of the ranking. And that's not to say that Florida basketball is not going to pursue high-level talent. I fully anticipate that. I also would say, though, that this is a group that will not shy away from accepting a commitment from a prospect who's ranked 130th, let's say, if Florida evaluates that player to be worth their time. And so that went really well for them this year. We'll see how it continues to go. They have a prospect in Isaiah Brown, who's in that high three-star, low four-star range. So another prospect who it seems that Florida has much higher conviction on than maybe the ranking systems do. And it worked in the first year, and we'll have to see how it continues moving forward.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think the success of Alex Condon and Thomas Hout, you know, gives Florida, their coaching staff, a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. Even if you look at the rankings and wonder if this guy is cut out for the SEC, I think that by landing two high-impact freshman forwards, which is very tough to do as a front-court player to come in and play year one, because not only is the game a much faster-paced, you know, product, and it's much tougher to play team defense, but you have to be physically ready. And for, you know, Tommy to be able to do that as well. First thing I got to say, there are some programs in the Northeast that I think would like to have that recruiting evaluation back, because, you know, programs like Penn State absolutely missed out on a guy who's been able to contribute in year one. But I also think it's a wise decision in retrospect for him to take that extra year at the prep level and arrive at Florida more physically developed, ready to contribute. And you've seen him improve as a guy who can space the floor and knock down shots from beyond the arc. That is absolutely an aspect of his game that you can point to and say, this is a guy still improving on the offensive end and becoming more of a weapon there. So certainly I think if the class was re-ranked, both those guys would be top 100 prospects. And I think it speaks to what I just said, you know, giving the coaching staff a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. If you're someone who reads in to recruiting rankings, and obviously us at 247 Sports, we give a lot of credence to recruiting rankings. But I do think in this situation in particular, you have to, I think, give a benefit of the doubt to Florida's coaching staff. You mentioned the systems being in place, and I think that's a really good time to switch gears here to the Florida football program that now has started spring camp, but is in a little bit of an interesting gap in their schedule for the second straight year. The Gators opened spring camp right before the start of spring break, so they had two practice sessions, and now a lot of guys are outside of Gainesville, away from the facility. They're taking that week away. They'll return Saturday to the building. Some guys will get back Sunday, but this is kind of an interesting build-up period where they get two practices and then return to the practice field. Jacob, you wrote a really good story about Florida having the systems in place here, and that's really what I want to talk about, is when you read into Billy Napier's comments, whether it's his signing day press conference where he said that he believes this is the deepest, the most amount of talent that they've had during his time in Gainesville. When you hear him talk about the systems finally being in place, including NIL, which I think everyone knows is such a critical factor for being able to compete on the football field, you absolutely have to have the NIL aspect taken care of. Just what do you make of Billy Napier's optimism heading into this spring camp? I know there's been a lot of turnover on the roster, Florida adding, 30 new players to the fold here over the last year, losing guys to the SEC, having to make multiple hires to the coaching staff, losing the strength and conditioning coordinator, having to make a hire after an NFL program came and poached away one of its on-field assistants. That hasn't seemed to sway Billy Napier in being confident in this team. Now, what it means for Florida in the 2024 schedule obviously remains to be seen. And we're not sitting here saying we think that Florida is going to absolutely be this 9-10 win juggernaut. But I do think that it's worth mentioning just how valuable it is to have a head coach express some optimism, because that really wasn't the message for the first 2 years under Billy Napier. He talked about how long it took to get things set up. He talked about how this is a program that they were going to have to go through an extensive rebuild just based on what was left, based on how much the college game has changed from the transfer portal to NIL. Do you read much into Billy Napier seeming optimistic about this team, or are you still kind of in wait and see mode?
I'm very much in wait and see mode. And I think that that is really important to stress at this point. And I think that everybody should be in wait and see mode, both, you know, people who look at Florida football in a negative way, which I would totally understand at this point, and maybe those who are, you know, overly positive or still quite bullish on what Florida is building, which I think that there is some merit to that as well. I think we should all kind of be meeting in the middle at this point, just given where things are at with Florida football in general. Florida is 11-14 through two seasons. You know, as you and I have discussed before, you are what your record says you are. And that isn't very good for Florida through two seasons. Now, that being said, I do think that they did some good work this offseason. I think that they brought in some people from the transfer portal who have the potential to be immediate contributors. Guys like Joey Slackman, providing that his bicep injury continues to heal properly. Chimri Adike, the wide receiver from Wisconsin, has really good rapport with Graham Mertz. I can see him being a factor very quickly early on. You know, Brandon Crenshaw Dixon, who you and I expect to start at one of the tackle positions come opening day in 2024. So Florida did work on both sides of the ball. And, you know, there are more on the defensive side who I didn't even name. And that is a positive. Florida brought in some really talented true freshmen. LJ McCray is somebody who I'm looking at as a, you know, potential year one star. I think DJ Lagway has year one star potential, even if we won't see it because Graham Mertz is back in the fold, which is an area of positivity as well that we can discuss here in a second. And so there are a lot of things that are going for Florida. And even on the coaching side, you know, Florida made a whole bunch of changes to its staff. It fired Sean Spencer, it fired Corey Raymond, and it brought in two guys in Will Harris and Gerald Chapman, who are very well respected in the industry and viewed as guys who can make an impact in just kind of changing the way things operate from a practice and operation perspective for the Gators. And there were other moves. You know, Ron Roberts comes in. That was a big hiring, you know, in this weird kind of defensive coordinator, kind of linebackers coach role. And so, yes, I agree that there was positive change, but there is also a lot of reason to be skeptical. I think with Ron Roberts and Austin Armstrong, that dynamic sounds really good and it might look good on paper. And it sounds like, you know, Austin Armstrong will continue to run the meetings and run the install type stuff while being kind of an overseer of the defense, while Ron Roberts is more of a coach of the coaches, as Billy Napier likes to say, and directly the linebackers coach. But how that dynamic unfolds as the season gets going, and even as we get deeper on into spring ball, will be something that is interesting to keep track of, because I don't totally understand it quite yet. I think that there's a lot of, you know, let's just see how it ends up working out. That's on the list. I think, you know, how Graham Mertz progresses from what he put together in year one versus year two is really important. He said several times now that his deep ball passing game last year was not good enough. It was not active. Florida wasn't very potent in the deep threat category. That's something that they're going to need to be able to do next this year if they want to take that next step forward. And that's a question for me. Is that going to be something that Florida is able to install? Russ Callaway, a former operator of the Air Raid offense, is in charge, kind of Florida's offense as co-offensive coordinator. But we still don't know as of March 11th what his responsibilities are going to be. Is he calling plays? Is he contributing to what plays are called? What is the breakdown of that? We still don't know, and we haven't really gotten a clear answer on that front either. And so, you know, I just need to see still where things are headed, what these plans really are. You know, Billy Napier said that the systems are in place. And that was the story that, you know, you just referenced that I wrote a couple days ago. The systems are in place, but the systems aren't publicly, at least outwardly facing, very clear. It's uncertain to me exactly how all of this is going to come together. It doesn't mean it can't. And it doesn't mean that Florida isn't, you know, setting itself up for a step in the right direction, some progress under Billy Napier. Its schedule is very hard, though. And, you know, I think that there are just elements to the operation that are to be determined, you know, a term that Billy Napier likes to use. So I'm not counting Florida out. I'm also not, you know, jumping on the Florida train now that Billy Napier says everything is ready to go and the systems are in place. But I'm willing to see what happens here. And I think that Billy Napier has done a good job of creating some intrigue, shifting things around and mixing things up to maximize the situation for himself, something that he said was really important. He's freed himself up to do the things he thinks he's best at by hiring, you know, people in different spaces. I'll be interested to see how Florida improves as a whole as well. You know, Billy Napier says the situation's better for him. How does that translate to what it looks like on the field in the season in 2024, which will not be easy? And that's kind of where I stand as a whole.
Yeah, I think that that's my overall, you know, overall sentiment as well, is that there still is just so much that we don't know. You know, we've only talked to Billy Napier once to start spring camp, but there are absolutely some questions. You mentioned Russ Callaway. What is his role going to be with the offense? We've watched him in the first practice. He was working with the quarterbacks and in routes on air. And then the very next practice, he's working with the tight ends during the viewing window. What is his role going to be? I think that Ron Roberts, when he spoke, what is going to be his involvement when it comes to calling plays for the defense? How much is he going to give Austin Armstrong, a guy that he's worked with in the past, free reign? How much involvement is he going to have aside from coaching the linebackers? That's something I'm absolutely looking to see answered here in the near future. And I do think we'll get those answers from Billy Napier here pretty soon. You mentioned the dynamic between Graham Mertz and DJ Lagway, and I just want to talk about this briefly, but I think that the hype for DJ Lagway, let's say it, it's very real. It's absolutely something that people, not just in Gainesville, are paying attention to, but it's something that is a national storyline of interest. I think that Graham Mertz was very efficient last year. He was an accurate quarterback. He took care of the ball at a high rate, but the lack of explosive plays certainly was an overarching theme of last year. And potentially Florida could turn to this two quarterback system with DJ Lagway, just the arm that he has, the athleticism that he has, if he's ready to contribute on the field in year one. I personally could see a situation where you're seeing Florida rotate guys in and have obviously specific packages for Lagway and then go back to Mertz depending on the situation. If they want to, you know, go on a 7-8 minute drive, I think that he's a very efficient quarterback in doing that and is very knowledgeable of the offense. And certainly, like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, getting a starting quarterback is something that I think Billy Napier puts a premium on, because he's been a guy who has absolutely stressed the importance of continuity in the college game and having that at arguably the most important position on the field in Graham Mertz is certainly something I think that he's going to give a little bit more weight to. But in this day and age, when you have a number three overall prospect in the nation, one of the highest rated prospects of all time to be in Gainesville here, I think that in this transfer portal era, there is certainly an argument to be made that you have to find a way to get this guy on the field in year one, or else you are putting yourself at a disadvantage heading into year two from an experience standpoint, or another program could certainly offer him a better opportunity with maybe a guarantee to be a starting quarterback. Way too early prediction from you. What do you expect DJ Lagway's role to be in 2024? Or are you kind of still in the same camp where a lot of it remains to be seen after he goes through spring camp, gets into fall camp? Where do you stand right now?
Well, I would say this. I mean, of course, it remains to be seen. And we're going to have to continue to observe that and ask the right questions and continue to just kind of see how it unfolds. That being said, my expectation as of March 11th at 2:50 p.m. when we're recording this, I think that DJ Lagway ends up being a factor in what Florida does on a game-to-game basis. Do I think that he will really ever, barring very poor performances, you know, surpass Graham Mertz for total snaps in a game this year? No, I don't think so. I think that Florida brought Graham Mertz back for a reason. It knew what it was getting in DJ Lagway, and it still chose to bring Mertz back. It did not have to do that. Mertz had long been committed when DJ, you know, when Mertz decided, I think I messed that up. I'm going to say that again. Lagway had long been committed when Mertz decided that he was going to go back to Florida. And so Florida consciously made that decision. I don't think that they're going to do anything to go back on that. I think Graham Mertz is a good quarterback. He showed that last year. And DJ Lagway is still a first-year player at the end of the day. And that's a very hard position to be in at the most important position in the best football conference. And so I think Florida will still choose to tread lightly. That being said, not including him in the game plan on a game-to-game basis would be a mistake in my eyes. I think what we've seen, you know, just from what he was able to do at the high school level and even in a very, very brief period, in these spring practices, that DJ Lagway is in that generational talent category. There are very few players with as much raw talent as DJ Lagway possesses in the country on a year-to-year basis. And maybe even over the last several years, he could be one of the more talented players. And you don't not involve that in what is, and it's not a secret, a very decisive year for Billy Napier's tenure. This is going to be a year that kind of dictates the future a little bit for Billy Napier. Am I saying that if it's not good, he's going to get fired? No, I'm not saying that. But do I think that this will go a long way in shaping how the fan base and maybe even the administration approach the tenure moving forward? Absolutely. I think every year has that kind of impact, some more than others, like this one. And you don't leave your number three ranked weapon on the bench in that kind of a season. So I anticipate some sort of mix. I don't know what that's going to look like. I think that it's going to be challenging to figure it out. Florida fans are all too familiar with, you know, what it could look like when two quarterbacks are splitting reps to some degree and kind of changing roles on a game-to-game basis. It can be messy. And so Florida will need to find a balance, and that's not something that they know now, and it's not something that I'll pretend to know now either, you know, this early on in the spring.
Yeah, I don't think we get an answer on that for months, but I don't think that the clamoring for information about DJ Lagway's role is going to be quelled anytime soon. You know what they say, the backup quarterback is the most popular guy on the team. Florida fans have certainly experienced that, whether it's Kyle Trask, Emory Jones, for several years as well. And I don't expect DJ Lagway to be any different here. I do think there's an argument to be made about not putting a guy in until he is fully ready to go. So I think a lot of that is going to be predicated on how ready DJ Lagway is by the time the season rolls around. Certainly beneficial to him that he is here for spring camp, and will continue to follow his progress, as well as guys like you mentioned, LJ McCray, Miles Graham, a legacy player that I know certainly has a lot of interest and hype, just being not only the son of Ernest Graham, but just being one of the top linebacker prospects in the country. We'll have a ton of information coming on them as well at Swamp 247. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, Jacob is going to be up in Nashville covering the SEC tournament. So follow him on X at Jacob Rudner, and make sure you stay tuned to Swamp 247. We'll also have, like I said, baseball coverage, plenty of recruiting coverage now that the dead period is gone. So make sure you follow Blake Alderman as well. And we'll be back for another episode during spring camp to continue talking about the progress Florida has made. Hopefully have some more clarity on the responsibilities of guys like Russ Callaway and Ron Roberts. So make sure you check that out at swamp247.com. But for this episode, that's going to do it for us. I'm Graham Hall. For Jacob Rudner, we'll see you next time.